This Do Lectures episode features head of Oak Grove School, Moretti Rice, recorded live at the global event in California, USA in 2012.
So anyway, I'm an educator, and my personal story is that no one, including me, would have ever predicted that I would end up in education, because to be really honest with you, I didn't like school at all when I was young. From the first day of kindergarten, when my kindergarten teacher reprimanded me for falling asleep during nap time. Who knew that that was a rule? You were just supposed to rest, not sleep. To elementary, junior high, and early high school, where my experience of school, and I also went to large public schools up in Toronto, because I felt invisible, kind of disconnected. I didn't feel like I belonged. I didn't feel anyone really knew me or particularly cared whether I was there or not. And by the time I was 15, I was very unhappy in school and not really sure what to do about it. Until one day, I woke up with this sort of epiphany, and I went to my parents and announced to them that I had decided what I wanted to be when I grew up, which was a high school dropout. And I don't know if I should be sharing this with Sydney and forgot that they were gonna be here, but now they know that I was a high school dropout. But my mom, bless her heart, you know, was that sort of self-made immigrant variety of parent, and had not had a lot of formal education, neither had my dad. And so she hardly missed a beat, and she said, okay, if you wanna quit school, that's fine. But on one condition, you have to learn to type and take shorthand so that you will always have a job. And that was it. I was free. And 6 months later, I could type 100 words per minute. And I was on a small Russian ship traveling from Montreal to Europe. I was 16. And about to go out and live and learn from the world, do in the world. And over the next 10 to 15 years, I did. I'm dating myself. That's actually Doris Day in that picture. But I did a lot of different things over the next 10 to 15 years. And then ironically, through a really wonderful program that they offered in England at the time, that's where I lived in Brighton for 14 years, I got to go to university and bypass getting a high school degree. Which was really nice for me. And I really enjoyed university. I was in my late 20s by then, and I also had a family and kids. And so suddenly I realized I both loved learning and I loved kids, and I wanted to be a teacher. But I also knew that I didn't want to do school the way school had been done to me, and I didn't want that to be the experience of my children either. So I started to look around and explore. I looked at Waldorf education and Montessori education and Summerhill and, you know, all these different alternatives. And eventually I found what I call my dream school, Oak Grove School in Ojai. I don't know if you can see it. There's a rainbow actually above the school, so it's like my rainbow school. And then I set off on a second big adventure. By this time I was living back in Canada, just outside of Toronto, and I threw my kids into my soccer mom van and hooked it up to one of those crank-up tent trailers and set off across country from Toronto to Ojai. I didn't have a work permit. I wasn't legally in the country. I just kind of showed up at Oak Grove, and it was like, I'm meant to be here, you know, let me in. And I hung around for a year trying to make myself indispensable, and eventually I convinced them that they should hire me, which they did, and that was 20 years ago. And so now I'm like leading this school. It's just like been a dream. When Duke first asked me to talk, I had thought what I wanted to talk to you about was this concept that I have of the agile mind, a mind that is flexible and adaptable. And actually, it was really interesting. John mentioned, you know, how he had to unlearn. So it's like, you know, a mind that can learn, unlearn, relearn, just doesn't carry the baggage and weight of accumulated knowledge and experience. And I think still think that's a really cool thing to talk about. But everyone kept saying, you know, speak from the heart, speak from the heart. And so what I realized, what I really wanted to do is I just wanted to share with you this love affair that I've had with this school and some of the things that I think are really important about the school that could possibly be replicated elsewhere. So the first thing about Oak Grove is that it has a mission. As Duke said, it was started in 1975 by Jiddu Krishnamurti. He started a number of other schools as well. And it has a very big do to bring about a different order of human relationship, a different kind of society. So Krishnamurti felt that the primary purpose of a school was not only to offer an excellent academic education, that was a given, and to teach kids how to function with excellence in the world, but a school should be much more than that. It should also be a place where the children, the students, the teachers, the parents, the adults together had a place where they could explore the perennial questions of human life and really ask, you know, can we learn to live a life that is more whole, more mindful, and more intelligent? So pretty big do for a little school. And I have to say that after 35 years, you know, I can't testify to whether the school is meeting the enormity of that mission, you know, to literally, he talked about changing the consciousness of mankind and thereby changing the world. You know, it's pretty big, pretty lofty stuff. But I do know that there's something that we're doing in this school that consistently, year after year, is raising up students who are competent, caring, compassionate, responsible contributors to the world. And I think that's no small thing in terms of what the school, what the world needs. So some of the elements of that. Number one, we are small. It's hard to see, I know, probably in the back, but this is it. Like, we can fit all together in this photograph. It's 200 students from preschool through 12th grade and all of the staff in that picture. Of course, our community is a little bigger than that because it also includes our parents, who are a very important part of our community. But we're small by intention because we feel that it's really important that students feel a sense of belonging and connection, that they feel like they're well known and they're well loved and they're well cared for. So at our school, kids are in relationship with kids that are younger than them, older than them, kind of like an extended family, and also multiple adults who deeply care not just about their education, but who they are and who they're becoming. And the amazing thing about an environment in a school when you have a place where the kids feel so cared for, they in turn care for others and that which is outside of themselves. They care for their community, they care for each other, they care for the world. And so this next photograph is a picture of something, it's just a concrete example of that. A couple of days a year, we invite everyone back to the school on a non-school day, a Saturday, a day off, to do hard labor for 4 or 5 hours, kids and teachers and parents, and everyone comes willingly. It's really amazing. We call them family work parties, and they dig and paint and clean and cook and build stuff together, kind of like a barn-raising atmosphere. And it's so wonderful because you really get to see in this concrete way how these kids just naturally have this feeling of giving back to the school that they love. So small and close relationship is really important. Second thing is we spend lots and lots of time outside. We really feel strongly that when kids cultivate, or when you help kids to cultivate a relationship with nature, it has a direct impact on them. There is nothing like being in relationship to nature to understand that, you know, life is in constant flux and change, that birth and death, generation, degeneration are all part of life, that we're all interconnected almost by osmosis. Kids learn that just by being in that relationship with nature. And of course, recognizing that they are also part of that interrelated whole and therefore are responsible for that whole. So nature is really, really important in what we do at school. We also have a lot of silence, which I do not have a picture of because it's kind of hard to take a picture of silence. But we begin almost everything we do at Oak Grove with a moment of silence. We teach kids like little strategies, like there's one for the younger ones called pause, put your attention within for 60 seconds. You know, we teach kids to spend time in quiet reflection. And when you think about the world that our kids are growing up in these days, it's so hyper-stimulated. There's so much input through the media and just the pace of life, that taking time to be still and be quiet is a really important part of what we do. Healthy bodies, healthy minds. So this is a picture of some kids with our horticulture gardening teacher. He calls himself Old McDonald. In our organic gardens, our school has had organic gardens since 1975, and I am absolutely delighted that there's been this movement for schools to have gardens. That's just been such a great thing to see happening in schools. So we promote, you know, healthy living, I mean, basically physical vitality, physical exercise, watching what you ingest, both through your eyes and your ears, like over media, that kind of thing. But also, you know, processed foods, sugars, that kind of thing. We happen to be a vegetarian school, a vegetarian campus. We don't ask that anybody be a vegetarian, but we don't serve meat, fish, or fowl on campus. And we have this incredible hot lunch program where, you know, honestly, you'd be amazed. It's kind of like a miracle, but you see like little five-year-old kids like eating Brussels sprouts, and that always makes me feel really good. So, you know, basically, you can't be mindful in the world without being healthy in your body. It's direct connection. So we make a lot about that. So I'm trying to think. I think yes, Piper's in this picture. She's over in the corner there. So. Classroom atmosphere and the relationship and role of the teacher with the kids. I love this picture because the teacher is on the same level as the kids. So our teachers are not the sage on the stage variety. They are very much facilitators and co-learners. And their job is to create an atmosphere in the class of love and trust as opposed to fear. You know, we've all had different experiences of school, and I know mine was certainly not one of love and trust. We de-emphasize grades because we don't want to promote competition. In fact, we don't even give grades until high school. We don't use reward and punishment. We are more in relationship when we deal with discipline issues. And we don't separate the kids into, you know, gifted, remedial. Everyone's learning together. Everyone's honored. We don't have like an honor roll, like you're special because you're so smart. You know, everyone is honored. Everyone has something to contribute. And we call that, at our school, we call it developing a climate of inquiry. So kids are not afraid to make mistakes. You know, you're not sitting there going, no, I don't want to say anything because, you know, it might be wrong. It's like really developing an atmosphere where the kids feel safe to learn. And then don't even bother looking at this slide because the lettering is so small, so I apologize. But a few years ago, the teachers got together and developed what we call the Arts of Living and Learning, which is sort of like our core standards at Oak Grove School. And the number one thing on the top there is the art of inquiry. So we very much honor more process over product. So it's not so much about like just learning stuff. It's also about learning how to learn, learning how to ask questions and inquire. So you're much more likely in a classroom at Oak Grove to hear a teacher respond to a student's comment with, oh, interesting, you know, what makes you say that? You know, where's that coming from? To kind of push the inquiry deeper as opposed to right answer, wrong answer, moving on. The second one is the art of communication. So we very much value discussion, dialogue, sharing ideas together. I mean, it's kind of like a big do lecture fest at our school. You see lots of circles, little kids at circle time sharing, elementary kids doing literature circles, maybe the junior high doing the process of council, if you're familiar with that, Socratic seminar, lots and lots of sharing and hearing multiple viewpoints. And you can't see it up there, but the two subsets under the art of communication, besides speaking and writing, are listening and collaboration. So we think it's just as important to teach kids how to listen as to teach kids how to write or read. We have the art of academia up there just because we really do learn things. Kids go to college, they do algebra. You know, it's not like we're all going out looking at butterflies all the time. And then the art of engagement, attention is number one under there. So we really ask kids to pay attention to just about everything, not just, you know, the math problem, the history problem, the science concept, but also pay attention to their speech, their actions, their behavior, their thoughts, their assumptions, their biases, and how those influence how they see the world. So, you know, really having them examining their own thinking. The art of aesthetics. We're very into beauty, and we're also really into the arts. So we have a huge art, music, theater arts program alongside our academic program. But it's also more than that. It's also about really teaching kids to, or not teaching kids, but giving them the opportunity to notice beauty, appreciate beauty. Because the other miracle thing with kids is that when you do that, they cultivate beauty and they want to protect beauty. And that's another sense of responsibility for the world. And then the last thing up there is the art of caring and relationship, which is really the heart and soul of our school. Krishnamurti spoke often about what he called the mirror of relationship. And he encouraged us to, in real time, in our day-to-day relationships, be paying attention, become aware of how our thoughts and our images and our projections are distorting how we're experiencing what's right in front of us. So I'm looking at Jennifer and, you know, how much am I projecting onto Jennifer, who I think Jennifer is, instead of just really being with Jennifer, that kind of thing. And you'd think that that's pretty sophisticated when you're working with kids, but you would be amazed at our kids. Even very young kids are more than capable of watching their thoughts, noticing their thoughts, questioning whether those thoughts are true and where they're coming from. They're really, really good at knowing the difference between judging and blaming, you know, like, Timmy's mean, right? And just stating what's going on when a conflict's happening on the playground, like, I feel sad when Jimmy says I can't play the game. You know, that's what's going on. You know, it's not like my projection of Jimmy's mean. And, you know, 8-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 5-year-olds can do that. And the more you give kids opportunities to do that, and help them to see how their thinking is doing this distortion, it's like, again, it's a miracle. They automatically just seem to grow in empathy and understanding and this deep recognition that, you know, we're all on the same ship, we're all the same, we're all one people, and it gives them the sense of responsibility. So, my community again. So again, I don't know if we're really making a difference in the world. I'm never gonna know. It's kind of like education's a little bit like farming. You know, you tend to the soil and you plant the seeds and you do the water and you give it sunlight and then you have to sit back and just have faith and hope, you know, that the plants are gonna grow up into exactly what they're meant to be. So I don't know what difference we're really making in the world, but I do know that in terms of my personal journey, at one time I thought schools were really useless, and now I think schools are really important. if there are schools like this. And, you know, with the growth of technology and so much information out there, a lot of people are saying schools may become obsolete because, you know, the fact is you can learn just about anything online. And I think that that's true. I think you can learn any knowledge online. But you can't learn what we're learning in this community. I think that, you know, a real school, you know, the whole education knowledge thing is kind of like a side gig. It's the reason to come together in community, and that the real work of a school is to create and provide a caring community where the children and the adults in that community can explore together about how they're living their life and to truly, as Krishnamurti said, live a life that is more whole and more mindful and intelligent. And he said something once, and I'm sure, I don't know if Maggie's here, but I'm sure she would agree with this, that a real school through its students should bring a blessing to the world. And I think that that's true, and I am incredibly blessed myself to be part of a school that I think just does that so well.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they would inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.